What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast. All right, welcome back, friends. Today we are going to be covering a survival case.
All right.
Yay. It's been a hot minute, I feel like, maybe. Well, yeah. No, I guess not. I did one last week.
Yeah, but it wasn't
just kidding.
Only survival.
Yeah, that's true. It did have some other like horrific things, but I'm going to be covering the case of Katie Beers. We did get a case suggestion from one of our listeners. They did not include their name, so thank you, whomever you are, for sending this case in. And I actually had this one on my list a while back, just because it did happen in December, so when she was abducted. But let's go ahead and dive into her case and tell you about what happened to Katie and how she, or why she's a survivor.
All right.
Katherine Beers, better known as Katie, was born on December 30th, 1982. She lived in Long Island, New York, with her mother Marilyn and her older half-brother John. Unfortunately, Katie never knew her biological father, since Katie's conception was the result of a one-night stand.
Okay.
And I guess her mother, I don't really know all the details. I couldn't really find anything as to who this man could possibly be. So I don't know if it's like her mom didn't know or if she knew and just felt like it was pointless to even try to involve him because it was just a fling, you know?
Right.
But nonetheless, she did not know who her father was. And her mother, Marilyn, did not have the best reputation for caring for her children. And it's reported that she allegedly was very neglectful of both Katie and her brother, John.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Marilyn often took Katie and John and left them with their godmother, Linda Ingrelli, and her husband, Sal. One day, due to a migraine, Marilyn did just that. She dropped off Katie and John with Linda, and once she was starting to feel a little bit better, she called to try to get her children back, but Linda refused.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm like, what? Like, you're not even family.
Yeah.
How? But my guess is that Marilyn wasn't going to fight her on it because she knew that she wasn't the best mom, and like getting the police involved might not be the best idea.
Right.
And in some of the sources, it said that they kind of fought over the kids. So, like, she would come and pick them up, and then Linda would come and get them. And it was just a lot of back and forth, just a very unstable environment for two young children, for sure.
Okay.
So, Katie and John are staying with Linda, and Katie's life with them would prove to be far worse than the neglect that she experienced with her mother.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Linda and Sal treated Katie like their maid. And honestly, it was worse than that. She was responsible for all of the laundry, the cleaning. She was required to cook and run errands for Linda and Sal. And mind you, she was only 9 years old at this time.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah. I was going to ask, how old is she? Nine?
Yeah, she's nine. Yeah. And I mean, for her entire life, pretty much since birth, she was back and forth with these people. So, I mean, this had been going on for years.
Right.
Worse yet, Katie was being physically, emotionally, and sexually abused by Sal. Mm. Katie rarely, if ever, went to school because, for one, they did not want anyone to notice the abuse. And two, they wouldn't have anyone to bully if they allowed Katie to attend school.
Right.
So just a toxic, volatile environment for a 9-year-old girl.
I wonder if that's part of the reason that Linda didn't want her going back to her mom, too, because she, like, was afraid that maybe Katie would, like, say something to somebody.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't want to say that her mom wouldn't care, because, like, you know, that kind of abuse is a little bit different than just neglect. I mean, neglect is horrible too, but I don't know. I kind of feel like she maybe, I don't know. I don't even know how to put it in terms, because I don't want to say that she wouldn't care, but right. It just maybe seemed like she just wasn't aware enough to know what's going on. And if her daughter did say, hey, this was happening, like, yeah, she might not believe her. So,
okay.
Now we enter into the scenario, John Esposito. And Esposito was a friend of Linda and Sal's, and he would frequent their home quite a bit. He loved spending time with Katie and her brother John, and would often come over to spend time with them. They even gave him an endearing nickname, Big John.
Okay.
Sometimes Esposito would bring the siblings little gifts, or take them out for treats, or to the arcade. And it seemed they really enjoyed spending time with this man, and it presented them with a little bit of normalcy in their chaotic childhood.
Right.
But unfortunately, Esposito was too good to be true. He was not a kind or generous man. He was, in fact, a depraved, nefarious predator. Mm-hmm. And on December 28th of 1992, which was 2 days before Katie would turn 10 years old, Esposito offered to take Katie out for a birthday surprise. He was going to take her to the arcade, take her shopping, you know, the whole shebang.
Okay.
But instead, he took her to his family home in Bayshore, Long Island. And it's reported that he had taken her there before, and so that wasn't, like, out of the norm.
Okay.
For their relationship, which is just crazy that, you know, this grown man is taking this young child to his home.
Yeah.
But, you know. Esposito had built himself an apartment above his family's garage where he had privacy and no one really went out there to check on him. What he built under that same garage was a 6x7 foot coffin-like chamber.
Oh my God.
In order to access this chamber, you would have to remove a 250-pound concrete trapdoor, slide through the 7-foot-long tunnel to another door that could only be accessed with a battery-powered wrench.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So inside that door, there was a, like, another chamber before you get to the smaller 6x7 chamber.
Okay.
And inside the smaller chamber, there was a toilet and a TV, and there is where he chained Katie up and locked her inside.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So, evidently, while he was digging this hole, some of the times while he was doing this, Katie was with him.
Oh my God.
Isn't that fucked up?
Yeah. And, like, he knew what he was going to do with it.
Oh, yeah. He was planning. It was for her. I mean, he came out and that was part of his statement, was he had done this specifically for her.
Jeez.
And this next part is so twisted and so calculated. Esposito then went to the local arcade, which was called Spaceplex, where he had lied and said he was planning to take Katie. And after spending a very short amount of time there, he frantically ran up to the arcade's manager, claiming that the little girl he had been with was missing.
Oh my gosh.
So the manager helped Esposito search for Katie. Evidently they searched for hours looking for her, because this is a 2-floor arcade. I'm sure they have all kinds of different entertainment there.
Yeah.
But they went through every single thing that they could looking for her. But of course, she was nowhere to be found.
Of course.
They then called the police, and once the police arrived, they also did a search for Katie in and around the arcade. But of course, she was not there, so she was not to be found.
Right.
Later that evening, Linda, who is the godmother, had received a call from Katie. In the call, Katie is heard saying, quote, "Aunt Linda, a man kidnapped me and has a knife. Oh no, here he comes right now." And then the call ends.
Okay.
And we later learned that this was not actually Katie calling Linda, but it was Esposito who was on a payphone, and he had pre-recorded a message, and he just played that for Linda. So he really thought this through.
Yeah.
While in captivity, Katie was allowed to watch TV, and she would often see her mother begging for her safe return during various news broadcasts.
Right, because they think a stranger just abducted her.
Took him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it did give Katie hope. Hope that people cared enough that she was missing and that she would eventually be discovered.
Aww.
Esposito would bring Katie blankets, toys, food, and soda during his frequent visits to her literal prison. And he would bring her junk food a lot, and that reminded me of the Cleveland kidnappings.
Yeah.
Because it's like just quick and easy, something you can just give them so you're not starving them.
Yeah.
He would also allow her to come into the larger part of the chamber, but only with his supervision, and he would always shove her back into the coffin-like cell before leaving.
Okay.
As if this situation wasn't horrific enough, Esposito would regularly sexually abuse Katie, typically while she slept.
Oh my god.
So this poor little girl tried with all her might to stay awake to hopefully prevent the abuse from happening.
Oh.
Esposito told Katie that he planned to keep her in the chamber for the rest of her life.
What the fuck?
I know. She would often ask him if that was the case, how would she ever go to college, get married, or have a baby? So he told Katie that when she turned 18, he would marry her and they could have children together.
Oh my god.
And at this point, he is 44 years old.
Ew.
Talking like that to a 9-year-old. Well, I guess at this point she's probably 10, but that is appalling to say the least.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Like, making plans like that with a 10-year-old, that's just sick. Police continued their search and investigation for Katie. Surprisingly, well, I guess not surprisingly, because he was the last person to be seen with her, Esposito was brought in for questioning, but he denied any involvement in her disappearance. He was accompanied by his lawyer, Andrew Sybin, and after an extensive interview, it appeared investigators had ruled him out as a suspect.
Right, because he had planned it out so well.
Yeah. The next person of interest that police brought in for questioning was Sal.
Right.
Who was now the estranged husband of Linda. And he knew that, you know, since they were no longer together, or police knew since they were no longer together, and Katie had lived much of her childhood with them, that he seemed like a reasonable person to look into.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but Sal had recently been arrested on sexual abuse charges, but he was free when Katie went missing.
Okay.
But for unknown reasons, Sal was cleared of any involvement in Katie's disappearance as well.
Well, that's good at least. I mean, obviously he wasn't a great guy, but like at least they didn't spend too long focusing on him.
True, true. That's very true. But I feel like this case, I feel like it just failed, like, pretty much her whole life has just failed Katie, one thing after another.
Yeah.
There was even points where they talked about how when she would go to school with, like, bruises, or she would miss weeks and days of school, no one would ever call CPS to report anything. Like, no one seemed to care enough to get involved, and so everything just flew under the radar.
That's so sad.
I know. I hate that so much, especially when I know, like, other cases where people are literally doing nothing wrong and then their kids, like, you know, they get looked into or their kids get taken for a short period of time or whatever the case is. And it's like, what is going on? Around this time, John Beers, who is Katie's brother, had come forward and told their mom, Marilyn, that he had been sexually abused by Esposito and that he believed Katie may have been as well.
Okay.
So investigators once again set their sights on John Esposito.
Okay, good. Good for John.
Yeah. I know. Isn't that so sick, though? Like, first you sexually assault her brother, and then you go to her. And evidently he said that he started abusing Katie because John got too old for him.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So police began surveilling Esposito pretty intensely. Then they had a small break in the case. A witness from the arcade came forward and stated that the day he claimed Katie had been abducted, they noticed that Esposito had arrived to the arcade alone.
Okay.
The walls are starting to close in on this creep, but police still need their smoking gun.
Right.
But they would never need that piece of indisputable evidence because on January 13th, 1993, Esposito confessed.
Oh, wow.
Just weren't seeing that coming, huh?
No, I was. Yeah. I thought maybe she escaped or somebody like discovered her or something. Not that he just would confess.
I know. I was when I read that, I was like, what? Why? Yeah. I mean, I'm glad, but like, why? So he had his attorney come forward with the information that led police to Katie in the concrete prison. And finally, after 17 long, excruciating days, Katie Beers was finally rescued.
Wow.
So her speculation later on, like as an adult, she thinks that partially it was because they were starting to kind of hone in on him and like gather, like they were basically gathering their case against him and he was feeling that pressure. But she also talked about how she would just incessantly ask him questions about like the future and like how he's going to take care of her and like where they're going to live and all this stuff. So she feels like maybe she annoyed him to death almost.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely
which is
think
like,
that
I mean,
played a role in like probably his paranoia about like if he'd be able to keep this up forever. And like, yeah, I definitely think that that had some impact on it. That's really smart.
I think so, too. Coupled with the stress of the investigation closing in around him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On June 16th, 1994, Esposito's trial began, and he pled guilty to Katie's kidnapping. Thanks to that guilty plea, though, the 10 pending charges against him, which included sexual abuse and endangering the life of a child, were dropped.
Damn, okay.
I know. On July 27th, he was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison and sent to Sing Sing Prison in Westchester, New York.
Okay.
However, on September 4th, 2013, he was found deceased in his prison cell, apparently from natural causes.
Okay.
So he didn't serve out his time, but I mean, technically, I guess that was, what, 15 years probably? Well, not quite, but.
He served some time, but so still it's like, oh.
He did serve some. I know. Want him to be in there forever.
Yeah. Hopefully he's in hell, miserable.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think all child predators go to hell, so.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Esposito was not the only one tried for the crimes against Katie, though.
Oh.
Sal Ingrielli was also charged for the sexual abuse against Katie after they discovered during their investigation into her disappearance that he had been sexually abusing Katie for years.
Wow. All right.
And he was sentenced to 12 years in prison, but he too died in prison in 2009.
Oh my gosh.
So, I know, it's like, what, whatever. I mean,
like,
I'm glad they at least served some time for what they did to her. But yeah, I know. It's like, what are the odds of both of them?
Yeah.
That happening to both of them. After Katie was rescued, she was immediately placed with a loving foster family in East Hampton, New York.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's so sweet. They have chosen to remain anonymous for privacy reasons, which I completely understand.
Yeah.
But in later interviews, Katie discussed how her new family always tried to protect her from the media, never letting her see newspaper articles or see what a media sensation that she had become.
Wow.
Yeah. In an interview with InStyle magazine, Katie credits her foster family for getting her through those dark days. Aww. She said, quote, "My foster parents and foster siblings were invaluable to me during my recovery." Mm-hmm. She was also immediately enrolled in spring school, which ended up being a safe haven for Katie. Since the staff and administration knew that Katie had gone through what she went through, they made extra effort to make her feel comfortable.
Oh, that's amazing.
I know. The first few days of school for Katie, the media was relentless, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a little girl. Leave her alone. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
They camped outside the school, hoping to catch a glimpse of Katie. Robin Struck, who was another student that was about the same size as Katie, actually put on Katie's coat with the hood up and left the school in full view, hoping that reporters would see her acting as a decoy so Katie could be taking out the back exit of the school.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
Wow.
Like, they really rallied behind Katie, and like, they didn't know her from Adam, you know?
Yeah.
And they really rallied behind her and just went the extra mile to make sure that like everything transitioned smoothly for her.
Right.
She also met and started receiving therapy from Mary Bromley, who was an East Hampton psychotherapist, and she ended up continuing her therapy with Miss Bromley until she graduated from East Hampton High School in 2001.
Wow.
And they remain friends even to this day.
Aw, that's amazing.
I know. I'm glad she had, like, a good support system after the fact, because, I mean, foster care is amazing and there's so many amazing people out there, but sometimes you don't hear the best stories come out of those situations. And I'm so glad that she was placed with a loving family and that she had all these people just standing at her side.
Yeah, and I was worried that you said you were gonna say she was like going back to her mom or something. Like,
no, thank God. I mean, I think police really looked into like how this happened, why this happened, and then Linda, even this crazy woman, she tried to get custody. She fought.
Are you kidding me?
Like, for custody of Katie when, number one, she's not even blood related to her. Number two, she abused her, or she allowed her to be abused.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, she allowed her to get kidnapped.
Yeah. No.
She let her go
ridiculous.
With this strange old man or older man.
Yeah.
And this happened to her. Just inappropriate on so many levels.
Yeah.
But I think part of her did love her and look at her like a daughter because she had been around for so long. But even still, like, you don't abuse someone that you love like that.
Yeah.
Katie is now a college graduate, a wife, a mother, and she's an insurance saleswoman. And she hopes to possibly be a mentor and a motivational speaker one day. And she believes that none of this would be possible had she not gone through the horrifying ordeal that she did. Which is so sad, because she's probably right, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, she probably is. And that's so impressive that she was able to take such a tragedy and something so traumatic and find the good in it, or like find the positive outcome because of it.
Right. Katie now has two children of her own, a boy named Logan and a girl named Haley.
Aww.
And, yeah, but she spells it H-A-L-E-E. It's like always these different interesting ways of spelling names.
Yeah, so many names to spell. There are so many ways to spell Haley, especially.
Yeah, I feel like my sister has that same thing. Like, people always miss, and hers is spelled just like yours, but with a K. So
yeah.
It's like the easiest,
yeah,
quote-unquote easiest spelling, but people get it wrong all
always
the time.
Always get it wrong, yep.
Yeah. And she is married to her husband, Derek, and the two of them actually met in college.
Aww.
Yeah. In January of 2013, Katie released a book telling her story of survival called Buried Memories. And I will have that linked in the show notes if you're interested and want to check it out. I didn't know about it. Otherwise, I would have gotten it and read it because I like to read survival stories like this, especially firsthand accounts.
Yeah.
But Katie's survival story has been featured on People Magazine, Newsday, Dr. Phil, Anderson Cooper, Nancy Grace, The View, and Crime Watch Daily. When asked if her experience has affected the way she raises her own children, she said, quote, I am overly cautious, especially with people that enter my child's lives. Yeah. I try to always see the good in people, but when the kids are involved, I need to be cautious. I try to not allow my experiences to shadow the good in people, which I think is a good outlook.
Yeah, and that's so hard because you always hear about, like, stranger danger and, like, stranger abductions and stuff like that. But, I mean, this person, like, Katie knew him and trusted him, yeah, probably, and, like, had been with him several times. So that makes it even scarier because it's just, like, you just never know.
I feel like it happened – I feel like it's – I mean, I don't know the statistics off the top of my head, but I feel like, you know, abductions that – are by people you know happen almost just as frequently as stranger abductions.
Yeah, but you don't always hear about it because if it's like a family member or something, I feel like it doesn't always get called an abduction or something like that.
Yeah, you're right. Though Katie still suffers from PTSD and is still in therapy to this day, she is now happy and thriving.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I know. And that is the story of Katie Beers and her survival, and I'm so happy that she was able to be found. I'm so happy that he got whatever wild hair up his ass and confessed
to
doing what he did. I know. It's like that never happens. No. That, like, literally never happens. If you know another case where this happens, let us know because we don't believe it.
Yeah, I really feel like it was a mix of Katie asking him all these questions about the future and him being like, how am I going to be able to sustain this for years and years? And then pressure from investigators and him realizing that, like, maybe things were closing in. So he was smart enough to go and confess to, like, try to get a better deal or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's just wild that he was just like, I'm just going to confess to what I've been doing. Not even just, like, let her go or something. Like, he was like, I'm just going to go and confess. Like, wow.
Yeah, like, why not let her go and then try to run? I mean, I'm glad he didn't, but again, it's
exactly.
Why? I don't know. Maybe he just had a change of heart and was having conviction or something. I don't know.
Well, whatever it was, I'm glad that he did. And Katie sounds like such a strong, inspirational person, and just, wow, I admire her strength.
And she stayed silent about her story until 2013, I guess maybe after he had passed away. She felt comfortable enough coming forward. I don't know. But I think it's amazing that she is sharing her story now and that she does want to be a light for people and try to help people who have been in similar situations because, you know, it does happen and people do survive and people do escape and they get found. And I think she would have been found eventually regardless just because police were closing in, but you know.
Wow.
Yeah. But that is all I have for you guys today. Thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that you all have a good weekend and happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate or not celebrate, happy that.
Yeah.
But we will catch up with you guys next week with a brand new episode. And until then, keep it human.
Bye.